Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, Thursday, October 27th, NFL Week 8 on the agenda. As always, Bet the Board powered by Bet Online. Your big game breakdown on tonight's Color Rush matchup between the Jags and Titans, fueled by the American Gaming Association. I'm your host, Todd Furman, and I'll be joined in just a matter of seconds by Payne Insider. For those new to the podcast, rehash what we saw Monday night, cover some of the marquee matchups for the upcoming weekend. And we may go on a little bit of a divergent path today, Payne. Talk about some of the ongoing literature and articles that have been circulating about the future of our industry and the potential trajectory things may be headed.
Lots of interesting things in the podcast. I know you cover that area of the industry in much greater detail than I do. For me, I'm just a monkey. See bet, place bet, that kind of thing.
Try and fit those square pegs into round holes each and every week throughout the course of the season?
You know, I don't know if that's quite the case.
I mean,
I think the record would say otherwise.
I mean, no, there's no doubt about it. Or if you go by some of the folks, we've been awfully lucky through 7 weeks, which I'm not quite sure is a thought process. Clearly, they're not listening in greater detail. But at the same time, if folks want to listen and be the first to get the podcast, sign up for Bet the Board, iTunes, SoundCloud, or, of course, the Bet the Board podcast newsletter that you can do as well at bettheboardpodcast.com. Some great information there. The voice you hear on the other end of the line, the incomparable Payne Insider. Follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. And Payne, before we officially open the book on Week 8, and we peel back the curtain a little bit as we do each and every Monday, wanted to get your take on what you saw from Brock Osweiler, the Houston Texans, and Denver, who went out there and boat raced their former teammate.
Brock obviously isn't good. And we talked about a lot of the metrics. I know there was some buyback on Houston a little bit, but when you talk about all the added elements you need to place a bet, they were all in favor of the Denver Broncos, whether it was all their outgoing hatred towards him, seemed very confident, overly confident in what they would do to Brock Osweiler. He also had the Kubiak angle, basically relieved of his duties in Houston. So that was a big game for him. I know he had a team meeting. The team rallied around him, gave him the game ball after the victory. But for me with Brock Osweiler, when you're average or below average, we talk about this all the time, you're going to play better when the elements are in your favor, and those are home games. So again, when you look at Houston, 4-0 straight up at home, 3-0-1 against the spread at home. Yes, it was the Bears, Titans, Colts, but Brock Osweiler is going to be better in those settings. The 0-3 straight up, 0-3 on the road in Brock's defense, and I'm kind of running out of excuses for him, you're not going to be that great. Most QBs aren't going to be that great when you face the Patriots, Vikings, and Broncos defenses.
Well, schematically, is he a fit for what Bill O'Brien wants to do? I know a lot of the talking heads have said he was the beneficiary of Gary Kubiak a year ago and clearly appears to be a fish out of water through a limited sample size thus far, knowing the target placed on his back with a $72 million contract.
Yeah, it's different. It's a different scheme. It's a different setup. And this is the other thing that I do like to factor in. When you talk to most people from NFL organizations, it takes about 10 games to get acclimated to a new system. We've seen it with the Dolphins, Adam Gase, Ryan Tannehill, obviously Brock Osweiler. He's not great. And when you're throwing in something that's average to below average and he's unfamiliar with things, it becomes a much tougher proposition. We see he doesn't have that rapport built up with Hopkins yet. That's one thing, even though Hoyer isn't great, he had great chemistry with Hopkins. So that's the big thing here. The other takeaway is, and I know you've mentioned it, you're not in love with the Broncos. And again, the issue we've talked about with the Broncos all season is that jelly donut of a defense. Fantastic on the edges with their pass rush in their secondary, but they can be hurt up the middle. And it's just amazing the Texans weren't able to take advantage of that ground game. They averaged 5.6 yards per rush attempt again. That Broncos defense in the interior, not very good.
Well, how much, you said not necessarily able to take advantage, and we know what the numbers look like, but the injury or whatever it was for the Texans, Lamar Miller appeared to be shelled for extended stretches with the shoulder. Of course, that big fumble at a key juncture from Alfred Blue. I almost got the feeling watching that game that that final score was misleading. We know Brock struggled, but if they're able to continue to stick with the ground game, they don't turn the ball over at a key juncture, it's not like Trevor Siemian wowed you. C.J. Anderson was workmanlike. You saw a steady dose of Devontae Booker. Of course, we know C.J. Anderson will be shelved for a couple weeks, but I didn't see a whole lot to be excited about from Denver coming in off of two losses, whether it was the offensive or defensive side.
Yeah, there's some serious question marks there. There's no doubt about it. We've talked about losing Malik Jackson up the middle, losing Trevathan up the middle. So it's really left a void on defense in that area. And the goal for Denver to kind of look the way they looked a year ago is get out to a lead, force the other team to have to pass, and it plays right into the strength of your team with those edge rushers and with that secondary. But if it's a close competitive game, like we saw with the Falcons, and you are able to keep pounding on the ground, this Denver team is very susceptible.
Yeah, it should be an interesting game this weekend when Denver has a chance for revenge against the San Diego Chargers. But before we get there, I should give the man that we picked on relentlessly on Monday a chance to defend himself. Now it's time for our favorite part of the week, and more importantly, a chance for Dave Mason to come on this fine podcast and defend himself, since we took shots at bookmakers and sports books far and wide. So we welcome in Dave. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason DOL. And Dave, I'm sure you heard our rant Monday about the New England Patriots and the headaches. You then send out a tweet saying it's Groundhog Day all over again. You want to defend yourself now for the way you guys have booked the Patriots?
There's no defense, man. We're getting killed. I mean, I don't know what kind of defense I have. I mean, we're waving a white flag over here. Each and every week, it's we're just getting pummeled on the Patriots. You know, I think last week was the biggest loser of the season for us. So, the public's biggest winner of that game. And again, these are, aren't even prime time games. I can't even think of it. Thank God they're not playing Monday night and Sunday night, or God, who knows what would happen. But no, I mean, it happens. You know, it's happened before on these kind of teams that are big public teams, and they're just shelling everybody and the house gets pummeled, and you just got to wait it through. You know, eventually they're going to their opponent's going to start covering. And that's when, the house is doing real well. But yeah, I mean, there's no other way to say this coming weekend, it's going to be the same thing. Groundhog's Day once again, because everybody is on the Patriots this weekend.
And Mason, those Patriots are 6-1 against the spread this season. The public Patriots are just killing you. But back to last weekend, any other NFL teams that just crushed you or you won a lot on?
It was a good weekend for the players. For the public, had a good weekend in NFL. Patriots, of course. The Broncos and the Packers. Packers Thursday night game, so that's a huge game. The Broncos Monday night. I mean, that's so many teasers were tied into that. The house, I mean, the Eagles was by far our best winner. That was really the only big winner. And then, Chargers and Lions were decent. But yeah, I mean, it was a good weekend for the players.
And Mason, when we start to look towards this weekend's card, obviously we know you guys are going to be rooting for the Buffalo Bills, not only to cover as 6.5-point dogs, where the number currently sits at BetOnline, but to win that game outright to eliminate some of the teaser and money line liability. But are you starting to see other big decisions brewing as we sit here on Thursday morning?
Chiefs, Raiders, Titans tonight. Those are the public sides. But yeah, that Patriots one is huge. I mean, 98% of the money is on the Patriots minus the points, 95% of the bets. And then you factor in the parlay and the teaser stuff. That's stuff we're mentioning more and more is, I mean, 95% of the teaser money on that game is on the Patriots. And 95% of the parlay money is on the Patriots. So it's not only about them discovering, it's – you got to knock out those teasers. We really need a Bills outright win there to really scoop all the money. So, that game is by far the biggest on the board right now, and it will be on Sunday.
Have you seen any professional action this early in the week potentially helping you with some of those public liabilities?
There's a little bit on the Jags, a little bit tonight. Under tonight. We have a little bit of early sharp action on the Bills at 6.5. Just a little bit, though. You know, those early sharp plays, it's kind of – they're not the sharpest of the sharp. That's going to come in tomorrow and Saturday and even Sunday. So the early week sharp stuff, it's not as concrete. But, yes, a little bit on the Bills, a little bit on the Cards, a little bit on the Broncos. Tons of college, as usual. Ohio plus 17, Akron minus 17, Navy plus 7.5. UConn plus 7.5, Army's plus 6. That's some of the college stuff.
I mean, normally we'd have to say that folks would be looking for a reload bonus or some first-time depositors, but clearly they're playing with house money right now. So it may not even be time, Dave, to tell them what you can offer up to the Bet the Board listeners as we start to head into NFL Week 8.
Well, there's always someone out there looking for a new place to play, though, so we might as well mention it. New bettors, new guys at BetOnline could get a 75% welcome bonus. Sign up at betonline.ag and use promo code 75BTB to get a 75% bonus. And if you already have a BetOnline account and for some reason you haven't been betting the Patriots the last couple of weeks and you do need a little bit of more money in your account, you can get a 50% reload bonus. Use promo code 50BTB for a 50% bonus. And there is some good news for the house. I looked ahead of the schedule, and the Patriots on bye next week. So we're not going to lose on them next week. Maybe this coming weekend, but then we'll have a week off. We'll be on a bye ourselves, I guess.
Dave, always great to get your take on Thursdays. I know our listeners appreciate your candidness and honesty about exactly what went well for the house, what you guys are looking at for the upcoming weekend. And it's time for you to put that Landry Jones jersey back in mothballs, dust off that O.J. Simpson that I know you are so prominent with.
I burnt that thing. What are you talking about? Mothballs.
Best of luck this weekend, and we'll look forward to getting you back on the podcast next Thursday to break things down, how everything played out for Week 8, and, of course, looking ahead to all the Week 9 biggest matchups.
All right, fellas, have a great weekend. Take care.
Payne, we got Dave's take. Obviously, there's some frustration around the shop for the way that they've been booking the Patriots, hoping for regression, and somewhere along the way, we have to believe that's going to come. But anything from that interview surprise you, given the way that they've been beat up so badly by the highest profile team with a future Hall of Famer at quarterback?
It sounds like Mason and Bet Online's throwing in the towel already for this week. Already admitting defeat.
I mean, you get beat up by the same team week in, week out. We know how big a decision listening to him it was last weekend against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And yeah, maybe that game could have gone a little differently. I don't want to rant about it again like I did on Monday, but it's almost a defeatist mentality. We're going to hang a number on the New England Patriots. We're going to let the number sit, and we're basically going to give money away to the public on money lines, teasers, and straight wagers until the Patriots go on a bye for week 9.
I'm just not sure what you can do. On the other side of that coin, we talked about that look-ahead line against Pittsburgh being Pittsburgh minus 1. You take the Patriots up to 7.5, you're talking about an 8.5-point adjustment through the key numbers, so more than its numerical value. You certainly couldn't take it to 10. Maybe you go to that dead zone, 8, 8.5, specifically 9 to eliminate some of those teasers getting through that very important key of 3. But not a lot you can do. This week's game, it's going to be fun. I know we'll talk about it later on in this podcast.
Well, I wanted to get to that a little bit later since we typically like to go through the Vegas rotation in chronological order. But rather than coming back to it, Payne, let's dive right into the Patriots and Bills. A game right now that we're looking at, New England, a 6-point favorite at BetOnline. You have to lay $1.15. Total here, 46.5. You have seen this number climb as high as 6.5 some shops, even a 7. At a sports book out here in the desert known to cater much more to recreational bettors. You said 7 might get you a little bit intrigued by the Bills, more so on the number. Now, when we break down the matchup, usually a better place to start sometimes than just doing number grabbing.
It's tough for me because you look at this number in general and I say, my core number probably should be 4 here. So am I getting value because the books are saying, finally, you know, just F this. We're tacking on a 2-point tariff here. And we're going to create some value. Or is it the other handicapping elements being factored into this game? And those elements are simply this. LeSean McCoy, he looks extremely dinged up. We know Rex Ryan didn't sit him out last week. He re-injured that hamstring. So is he going to be at 70% if they force him into action? You also have that revenge mentality where the Patriots kind of just threw that game away. They threw Brissett out there, a third string quarterback who had a torn thumb ligament at the time. So that lost to Buffalo. You know, they probably gave them that game, and this was the game they had circled on the schedule. So that's the key here. We've talked about the improvements of Buffalo's defense, and yes, some improvements there since Rex Ryan gave up the duties of play calling, but you dig a little bit deeper, Buffalo's faced the easiest schedule of opponent offenses.
Oh, and don't think for a second that what Miami was able to do on the ground between the tackles last week against this same Buffalo defense will be lost on Coach Belichick and company. We know Bill loves to try and find new, unique ways to beat his opponents, especially within the division. Now, I'm not sure the Patriots have that ground-and-pound type mentality that we saw at Jay Ajayi, but should we expect New England to stay committed to the ground game, or do we think it's going to be vintage Tom Brady throwing it all over the yard, taking advantage of a Bills defense, who you mentioned, the beneficiary of playing some softer opponents?
Yeah, Tom didn't really throw the ball a ton this past week against Pittsburgh. They stayed dedicated to the ground game. And knowing Bill Belichick, I think he sees some issues with his defense dead last in pass rush efficiency, just not getting after the quarterback. They made a play on a boom or bust for trading for Van Noy this week, maybe give them some help off the edges a little bit. Landry Jones, aside from that interception, did some things against that Patriots defense, and if you're Bill Belichick breaking down the film, maybe scares you just a little bit in that regard. Maybe some help this week for Bet Online if you kind of just look at blanket home dogs through the first 7 weeks of the season, 59.4%. Maybe they get a little help from Buffalo this week covering this number. Not sure they can win outright to eliminate those teasers and money line parlays, but at 7, potentially where this is headed, they may get some help, and they may lessen that liability. I think we'll probably see some professional bettors, regardless of injury, regardless of situation, just picking off Buffalo if it gets to 7.
You know what would have helped that Patriots pass rush efficiency? Having Chandler Jones on the roster as he wreaked havoc all Sunday night against Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. But we may as well head across the pond for the early morning kickoff, 9:30 a.m., for you folks listening on the East Coast, a little bit earlier for us on the West Coast, the 6:30 kickoff from London. You're looking at Cincinnati, a three-point favorite against the Washington Redskins at BetOnline. Total this game, 47.5, looking to trend towards 48. And I guess, Payne, before you even try and start handicapping this game, you have to look at the injured list for the Washington Redskins. Josh Norman, Reed, Williams, all return to practice but in limited capacities. Do we think that these guys are going to play, let alone make the trip across the pond?
I'm not really sure on the Josh Norman thing. Trent Williams is a big loss if he can't go at left tackle. I think Reed has been at practice all week, going to try to give it a go. Obviously, that's a huge addition. When you factor in what we've seen with this total, it's back to London and specifically back to Wembley Stadium. And I know last week we saw a venue change where they played at a rugby stadium in Twickenham. The grass was longer. They added like an artificial surface on top of the regular grass, and it looked like both teams were playing in concrete cleats. So you're going to have to adjust for that. I know a lot of guys last week were talking about the London trend and games going over. Completely different stadium, completely different surface, and it led to a low scoring game. So you just want to be aware of that, that there'll be different factors this week. We saw this total open as low as 45.5, now as high as 48. And when you really break down this game, two teams led by offense, both top third in efficiency. Two defenses, this Cincinnati defense has really, really regressed. Two teams trending towards the bottom third in defensive efficiency. And quietly, we know he does very well in the regular season, not so much in the postseason, but Andy Dalton, really despite this lack of weapons, he's having a great season. Right now we have him fourth in QB efficiency out of 34 qualifiers. And if they do get Jordan Reed back, we've talked about that ad nauseum, what he does to the offense, really becomes that blanket over the middle for Cousins, makes him feel more comfortable, allows you not to really double guys on the outside and creates those one-on-one matchups for, you know, DeSean Jackson and their bevy of speed receivers.
Were you at all concerned? I know you said the Bengals defense has clearly regressed. What you saw last weekend with their inability to contain the edge against Kevin Hogan and that read option, is there anything that the Redskins can do to kind of replicate some of this success? We know Washington, I think they played better and actually may have deserved to win in Detroit. Cousins was actually quite decent. aside from some boneheaded decisions at key junctures that led to turnovers. But at the same time, you mentioned these two teams, and when I look at the number here, I almost want to make the case that the wrong team, and dare I say, yes, the Bengals should be favored, but a field goal feels awfully rich.
I would agree with that sentiment, that the field goal feels awfully rich. I think we'll probably see some sharp money at some point on the Redskins. Not sure if I get there personally. In terms of what we saw from Cincinnati's defense last week, they're just not as good as they've been in years past. I'll give them a little pass for the Kevin Hogan thing. They obviously prepped for Cody Kessler goes down with the concussion. He's not very mobile. So when you throw a guy like Kevin Hogan in there who you haven't game planned for, haven't schemed for, and he's not a great passer at this point, he's going to lean on those legs a little bit. So it's something that they potentially didn't prepare for. So I hate to kill them for that. One big factor here is when you talk about this total, does Washington go a little bit more pass heavy with Chris Thompson? It looks like Matt Jones is going to be out this week. He's kind of found himself the past few weeks after being called out by Gruden. And they've had that added element of a physical ground game. With him not there, do they give up on the run? Does Chris Thompson become, you know, probably a decent little fantasy play this week in terms of value? The other question mark here is with this total, familiarity. We know Gruden was on the staff of the Bengals. He was their offensive coordinator. Marvin Lewis knows what he likes to do. On the other end of the spectrum offensively for Washington, he knows what Cincinnati likes to do defensively. So it'll be an interesting matchup, and we'll see who has the edge there.
Yeah, definitely a game that adds some intrigue and hopefully a little bit more exciting from a gameplay standpoint this Sunday morning than what we were forced to endure last week, as you mentioned, with the Giants and Rams. A prove-it-to-us type game, afternoon game of the week between the Packers and Falcons. Atlanta look to try and bounce back from losses against the Seahawks and Chargers, a game that they let slip through their fingers. You're looking at the Falcons, a 2.5-point favorite. You do have to lay $1.25 at BetOnline. Total 52.5 as they play host the Green Bay Packers. The Packers come into this one, I won't call it a dominant performance by any stretch of the imagination against the Bears, but they do have extra time to prepare, and the offense found a little bit of continuity, even if it came in the form of dink and dunk to the likes of Ty Montgomery.
Different sport, but I had a chance to talk to a coach this week, and he said something that really stuck with me, and it kind of lends itself to the Packers, and it was, never look past something in victory you wouldn't in defeat. And so everyone's kind of raved about this Packers run defense. That was kind of debunked when you saw they played the easiest slate of run offenses, and then the Cowboys went in there into Lambeau that same week and kind of treated them like little brother in the driveway. We've touched on this on the Monday edition of the podcast. What appeared to be a great offensive performance. You score 26, three guys have 10-plus catches, the offense goes for 400-plus, but you deep dive into that box score and you see the Packers 81 offensive snaps. In those 81 offensive snaps, only 5 yards per play. Offensively, that's 28th in the NFL. The average is 5.6 yards per play. The Bears' defense allows 5.3 yards per play on the season, and that was, you know, under normal circumstances, not a worn down on the field 81 snap defense because you're loaded with injury circumstances. So I'm not quite sure the Packers are back despite winning.
You mean you're not ready to make Davante Adams a first ballot Hall of Famer into Canton given his performance against the Bears last week, Payne?
You know, they really don't like Davante Adams, and that's very clear. He had an opportunity to eclipse the catch mark, and you figure that offense, a lot of dink and dunk. Maybe we throw a screen, give Davante Adams that record. And he's just kind of been the underachiever. There's never been that chemistry there with Rodgers, never been that chemistry there with the coaching staff. And they don't give him the record. It could have been an easy record to obtain. That was really interesting to me. But when you look back at this game and you look at the market, it's taken a slow bleed. Opened Atlanta -2. You're now at Atlanta -3. There's potentially value there off back-to-back losses in games they could have won. What happens if they win those games? It's at least 3.
I think it's even higher than that, to be honest. I think we're talking 3.5, 4. If Atlanta comes into this, even a split against Seattle and San Diego, and Hoyer's out there for the duration and the Packers win with a late field goal, I think you're talking about a scenario where the Falcons are probably a 4-point favorite.
Yeah, and so there's value there. The reason I haven't run to bet this yet is I hate Tevin Coleman being out. And this is an interesting stat someone threw me. He's averaging nearly 14 yards per target out of the backfield. And to put that in perspective, Marshall Faulk, the innovator of the pass-catching running back, set the season running back record in 2000 with a hair over 10 yards per target. And Tevin Coleman's eclipsing that by 4 yards right now through 7 weeks. The other thing here is Devontae Freeman, expected to be the workhorse now, hasn't practiced all week. He's dealing with a hip injury. It's really been bugging him. So if he's not at 100%, suddenly you don't have that ground game to complement the pass game. Atlanta, we know, should do very well passing the ball. Both starting cornerbacks out again this week for the Packers secondary. So if they had that ground game, this would be a very, very tough game for the Packers, but it scares me without those running backs.
May have to explore a little bit in the prop market on Julio Jones then. You may have to go over 130, but it doesn't seem to be much of an issue against a Green Bay defense that has struggled against elite-level pass catchers from time to time. Payne, we hit on this game a little bit on Monday. We said there were some circumstances working against a road-weary Seahawks team going back on the highway for the second straight week. They're 2.5-point favorites for their trip down to the Big Easy to take on the New Orleans Saints. Total at BetOnline, 48. You look at the Saints' performance against Kansas City, and while it could have easily gone the other way, a lot of Drew Brees' big yards came in comeback mode in the fourth quarter. How will the matchup, I know everyone's going to talk about New Orleans and that high-powered offense against Seattle's defense, so I want to hit on that first, but also want to get your take on what the other side of the ball may look like when Seattle's offense, that has struggled for large stretches this year, tries to move the ball against a Saints defense that nobody gives a whole lot of respect to.
It might not reflect in their record, but this Saints team is improved. And we talked on our preview podcast about Rob Ryan leaving being a huge bonus. And if you're kind of just a casual fan to the naked eye, you might say, well, you know, the defense still isn't great. And you're right. But there's been a lot of improvement in that category. Right now, where you look at this Saints defense, 28th in overall efficiency. Last year, they were 32nd. So small improvement there. But if you really dig into last season's numbers, they would have been behind everybody if there were 50 teams in the NFL. Okay? That defense last year was 2 times worse in overall defensive efficiency than the 31st ranked defense. So while only 5 spots in overall ranking, the improvement on that side of the ball has been drastic. Devin Breaux, not sure he's back this week, but has practiced on a limited basis yesterday. And I think the one thing we touched on on the Monday edition is the late Sunday game, an absolute grinder. You travel across the country for an early start. Your defense was on the field for 47 minutes Sunday night. Will they wear down in this spot against a Saints tempo offense? And then you kind of just look at some of the scheduling. Next 2 weeks for Seattle, both primetime standalone games. Is this their focus?
Yeah, I mean, those are the kind of things you look at throughout the course of the NFL season. Oftentimes, some of those situational factors don't work in our favor as handicappers. Every now and again, you see an unforeseen benefit from a lot of this, and hopefully that becomes the scenario here with the Saints short home underdogs. Actually, a role that they've thrived in. Surprisingly enough, you look at the Saints over the last 3 seasons, 11-3 against the spread when listed as an underdog. They've really been successful there this season as well in a limited sample size, going 3-0 against the number when installed as a dog.
I will say this too. It's obvious Russell Wilson is not close to 100%. He's dealing with the knee, the ankle, and if you've done your required reading, which we tell you to do every single week, he has missed practice with a right pec injury, and it's on his throwing side. So we'll see. Now, you know, maybe not something that keeps him out, but you're talking about the culmination of the ankle, the knee, and now the pec injury on your throwing side. And you mentioned it, it was in come-behind fashion, but despite the loss to Kansas City last week, that Saints box score, they were a positive 0.2 yards per play. And all the factors that we've kind of mentioned here is the reason professional bettors did not wait. Now, Mason's alluded to this, that sharp NFL money likes to wait until those limits rise. It did not wait this week. They grabbed the 3.5, they grabbed the 3, and it's why you're looking at 2.5 right now.
Yeah, we tried to do our best on Monday to tip our hand, but when you record early in the morning, Sometimes you have to be able to get down first before we can share it all with the masses. Want to add one thing that I found interesting as well, Payne, from Pro Football Focus this week regarding Russell Wilson. He tried to keep the ball on that read option play. I think it was a 3rd-and-1 when he was tackled for a loss. After that particular snap, there was not a single design run all game for him. And when you look at the numbers thus far through the course of 6 games, 7 games, just 11 runs through 6 games, and he's on pace to finish this season with only 29 runs after 46 design runs a year ago and 68 the year before. So clearly durability a concern, and he doesn't have that dimension of his game, not quite the same dynamic passer throwing from the pocket.
Not sure why we haven't seen more of the ground game. Christian Michael, Thomas Rawls, potentially once he gets back and healthy, CJ Procise, who you drafted fairly early, they've really gone to just having Russell Wilson chuck the ball around. I think they need to get back to some ground and pound.
I'd have to think it's something to do with the offensive line, but you're exactly right. At least try and
better
show.
Better, though, in run blocking than true. Pass blocking. So that, again, doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, at least try and show a commitment to the ground game to give Russell Wilson a chance to take advantage of play action opportunities that are there. When we look at the Chiefs and Colts, Indianapolis offense gets buoyed by the potential return of Dante Moncrief, who was upgraded to probable earlier this week. You see Kansas City, a 2.5-point road favorite at BetOnline, total of this game at 50. And I know I shot you a couple notes here. Clearly the market's telling us one thing about who the side is, but do the X's and O's line up here to try and make the Colts an intriguing home underdog?
What word did you use? Did you use buoyed? Did I hear that?
Buoyed, yeah, buoyed. Every now and again, you call me the well-read man, which of course is relative on this podcast. It might be for a lot of our audience. So I try and incorporate a word or two. I know no one on this podcast, at least I don't think, is studying for their SATs because we don't encourage underage wagering in any capacity. But, you know, you have to try and expand people's vernacular and show that you can learn a thing or two, not only about handicapping and finding ways to get to the window, but that you can take into your everyday life.
Yes, buoyed. We still haven't given the terminology for what you call quarterbacks. Maybe we save that for a later date.
We can get into it. We can get into it right now. I mean, you're talking about one of the best pivots in the entire NFL.
Yes, no longer called a quarterback, but a pivot. You are one of the fancy guys that likely called pool in billiards snooker. You were responsible for that probably as well.
Hold on a second. I don't know, and this will show you know how dumb I am. Aren't those the same? Aren't those different games?
I have no idea. It's on a goddamn pool like table pool, with a stick and balls. And it's called pool in billiards.
All right. I thought there was a little difference.
Yeah, I'm sure it's different. I'm sure there's different rules. You have to have different rules for the pompous game of snooker. But it's a goddamn pool table, some sticks, and some balls. That's pool.
All right. Well, keep in mind that we won't be doing a snooker podcast anytime soon. Although we will entertain offers from European-facing books if they're so inclined to get into the space. But I digress.
No problem. We probably have about 47 listeners for that. To the game. Just, you know, shoot me. I'm not going to be able to do that, and I usually laugh about this because I say that about a game every single week and then end up on it. It's just so damn ugly. And this Colts team may be the worst in football. Andrew Luck currently acting as the concrete foundation for a shitbox home. This team could be worse than the Browns, if not for Luck. And I hate to call it misleading because the Colts did win the box score last week, but they won by 8 on the road, trailed late in that game by 3, and if you look at the live market, it made them a dog at that point. So if you did lose that game, which the market thought you would in live wagering, you'd be catching at least a full 3 here. I like to look at both ends of the spectrum when I handicap a game, and there are some positives for the Colts. It appears you're getting Dante Moncrief back, as you alluded to. On the season, you are a net negative 6 yards per play. But the last 3 games, you are a net positive 0.2 yards per play. So is there some improvement there, or is it kind of a byproduct of facing Jacksonville, Chicago, Tennessee? We have seen pro money on the Colts, and that is apparently going to be the side. For me, probably a better teaser leg taking that home team through the 3 and the 7, then straight at this point plus 2.5.
Yeah, I think this will be an interesting game to see how far the Colts have come. You mentioned the Chiefs, very workmanlike effort last weekend from Alex Smith. This is a team still trying to figure things out, at least when I watch them offensively, to use that three-headed monster in the backfield. We know Jamaal Charles was inactive, dealt with some lingering soreness in that knee a week ago. One of the games that we probably thought would be a much higher profile on Sunday than what it is at this juncture of the season. Carolina playing host to the Arizona Cardinals in what many can deem a revenge spot for Arizona, who was absolutely throttled in the NFC Championship here a year ago. Carolina, a 2.5-point favorite at BetOnline, lay $1.20 there, 47.5. Carson Palmer continues to wow me, and not in a good way, Payne. When you look at some of his efficiency numbers, some of his grades by a lot of the data analytics sites that are out there, Cam Newton appeared to be in a little better spirits throughout the course of this week. Maybe there's a rejuvenated team for Carolina who couldn't get to the bye week fast enough. But where do we even start looking to try and handicap a game that I know a lot of us had circled? Hey, we're going to bet Arizona in almost any circumstance when they get a chance to atone for that loss. Maybe things a little bit different now as we sit here in week 8 than we were talking about this game in the middle of August.
Yeah, absolutely. This feels like a game that I want no part of. Some of the factors that apply for the Seahawks also apply here for the Cardinals. You know, you got the late game, the cross-country travel. Carolina has had added time. You know, that said, though, we've talked about this. Arizona has this specific game circled. They want that revenge off the embarrassing playoff loss. The question is, can Arians get the troops rallied? I know he's talked a good game this week in the locker room, put some people on notice, specifically their kicker. The more interesting news is Cam has been in the news for vacationing during the bye week. At 1-5, you got to have to ask, where's his focus? We know mentally he hasn't seemed right since, you know, the Lombardi Trophy kind of slipped through his hands. And one thing that I wanted to look at, and I know me and you have personally discussed this, is some of those bye week trends. I'm not really sure what you've uncovered there. My guys looked into this. Not a ton revealed. We know that CBA, it changed in 2011, and it basically limits what you can do at practice, limits what you can, you know, limits the amount of practice you can have, not as many padded practices, no two-a-days anymore. So I got sent this note, and since it started in 2012, the new CBA rules, teams off the bye week are 72-77-3 against the spread. So now maybe this becomes something to look into. It takes time to adjust. We talk about this all the time. You don't know what you don't know. And so the first three seasons after the new CBA has kind of made this lopsided. The first three seasons, 48-59-1 against the spread. But the last 2 years, if you know, maybe coaches have had time to adjust. It's certainly a small sample. But it's been 24-18-2 against the spread. So it's something to monitor. Not a huge factor this week, but if we can kind of figure out where this trend's heading, maybe it becomes just one element to the handicapping teams off bye weeks.
And when we look at some of the key matchups here, we know Arizona looking to be a little bit run heavier with David Johnson getting his workload up. Clearly the weakness for Carolina is that secondary. Do we trust Carson Palmer to be able to take advantage of that? Because I think Arizona defensively, you're going to get a max effort on that side of the ball. And that team, that particular unit has really impressed me, starting to show flashes of what we saw last year, which would lead me to make a case for the under if I thought that Carolina's defense could do anything close to slowing down a vertical passing game should Arizona look to go in that direction.
It's tough for me when I look at the Cardinals, and I know they've had a larger commitment to David Johnson, maybe too large of a commitment. This guy may wear down. And I know Andre Ellington isn't nearly the complete back David Johnson is, but he's a fantastic number two. And when Chris Johnson potentially comes back, you really have depth at that position to where you can't afford to wear David Johnson out. And he was an absolute workhorse last week. This Cardinals team, despite what you think and despite what many others think about Carson Palmer, they could easily be 5-1. They probably should have won every single home game that they've had. You lose New England, you lose last week due to your kicker. You probably should have beat the Rams if you look at the analytics, the box scores, and what that depicted. My issue here is, and why I think maybe the under makes some sense, is because I'm not sure, as bad as that Panthers secondary is, and maybe it's benefited with the bye week, there's not a lot of weapons on this Cardinals offense. We can say all we want about Carson Palmer and the regressions. Look at the weapons on this offense. Yes, Fitzgerald is a nice player, but at this point in his career, awesome possession blocker, receiver. Awesome target over the middle, more of your possession guy. Michael Floyd, this was like the big year for him. He stinks. Like, he has not done anything to improve this team. John Brown was kind of that X factor last year. Hasn't been himself. We know he's got the sickle cell trait, not going to be there. Jerron Brown goes out in this game. Looks like it's an ACL injury. He's going to be out for an extended time. J.J. Nelson really going to need to step up as that deep threat. But past David Johnson, there's just not a lot of weapons on this offense.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about Arizona and some of the potential, but you're exactly right. You watch them and you're not wowed with their ability to stretch the field or find some of that big playability which made them so successful last year en route to getting to the NFC Championship. You talk about workload for David Johnson and the potential for him to wear down. Well, a running back who has clearly taken the league by storm has been Ezekiel Elliott, and we'll get to see him on the big stage on Sunday night along with a tandem of rookie quarterbacks and Dak Prescott going up against Carson Wentz. You're looking at the Cowboys coming out of the bye as a 4.5-point home favorite. Lay $1.05 at BetOnline. Total here, 43. Philadelphia, despite getting the win 21-10 last week against the Minnesota Vikings, they were anything but impressive. Ball security remains an issue. And Carson Wentz has looked downright pedestrian 2 weeks in a row. The question I have for you, Payne, is can we expect that Philadelphia Eagles defense that played with a chip on its shoulder and really made life miserable for Sam Bradford to travel as well as it's performed at Lincoln Financial Field so far this season?
It's going to need to be very good in this game. It really is. It's going to need to really contain. It's tough to stop the ground game for the Cowboys, but you're going to need to contain the ground game a little bit. We know how great that Cowboys offensive line is. And as good as Zeke Elliott's been, I was looking at some of these metrics. A lot of it's been that offensive line. Zeke hasn't been that great. I know he's leading the NFL in rushing, but he's only forced 11 missed tackles so far. So you really have to focus in stopping the ground game. For the Eagles, we know Doug Peterson. He's from the school of Andy Reid, so they don't ask a lot of their quarterback. Just be efficient. Don't turn it over. A lot of dink and dunk. But even Wentz at this point seems to have trouble with that the last few weeks. I was kind of difficult. I was hard on myself saying that Wentz has flipped my mindset after the first 2 weeks. I think I might have been right. My initial gut instinct might have been right on this guy. We know he's a hard worker. The key here, though, is this is a rivalry game. Philadelphia circles this game. They hate the Cowboys. It's not so much of a rivalry game for Dallas. That's kind of Washington, the Giants. So this is the big rivalry game. From a metric standpoint, it looks like there's value in Dallas, but we know not a great home field advantage. And this rivalry game is huge for Philadelphia, and it's kind of why we've seen bites of the of taking plus 4.5 here, despite the public being on Dallas.
What do we think of this Dallas defense, Payne, at this point? I mean, we're very critical of them. We know that Dallas has gotten back to playing clock control and keeping that unit rested, like much like they were 2 years ago, which led to their success. Last season, they spent an inordinate amount of time on the field and were exposed. Do we think they're making strides, or is it just kind of smoke and mirrors again in 2016 with Dallas' stop unit?
A little bit of both. There has been some adjustments. You have to factor in who they did not have in the front seven due to injuries, due to suspensions. They're starting to get healthier from that perspective. The one silent adjustment that has helped this defense is flipping Claiborne. He would look like a bust. They flipped sides of the field for him early on this season, more comfortable at cornerback where he's currently slated. So that's been a big improvement, a big help to this defense. It's not a great defense. It's never going to be a great defense. But if you can keep them off the field with that ball-controlled offense, it allows them to at least be fresh. And when you're fresh, you can kind of rotate guys, get after the quarterback. So that's the benefit here. I just don't think they're back at this point. But Carson Wentz on the road scares me a little bit. I haven't done anything with this total right now. Dak Prescott has looked really, really impressive. They're starting to implement more of his legs into the system with some design stuff, so it's a wrinkle Philadelphia is going to have to plan for. I don't love this game. It's a game I'm probably not going to be on. I know it's the Sunday night game. Everybody's going to want to bet it. But for me, nothing at this point. Obviously, things will change in the next 72 hours or has the potential to change, but I just don't see a ton right now.
Yeah, it should be a good game to watch and awfully interesting when you look at this total of 43 between Philadelphia and Dallas and realize you had a higher total last Sunday night between Arizona and Seattle, a game that, as we all know, 6-6, but more importantly, got all the Bet the Board listeners to the window with the first half under 21.5 in a game that was 3-0, and I'm not sure they really came close to eclipsing 21.5 total yards of offense in that particular matchup. If you're hoping for a preview of Minnesota-Chicago and you're new to the podcast, that'll come on the Monday edition of Bet the Board. And to be the first to listen to not only that podcast, but all subsequent ones, sign up SoundCloud, iTunes, or the Bet the Board podcast newsletter at bettheboardpodcast.com. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. And of course, the podcast account at Bet the Board Pod, the guest you heard earlier in the show at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Payne, I know when it comes to the Thursday night showdown, everyone gets excited because it's a chance for them to wet their whistle. And tonight's big game breakdown, as always, between Jacksonville and Tennessee, comes to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. You can check out all the great their work they're doing on the legalization efforts at AmericanGaming.org and follow them on Twitter at Amer Gaming Association. But Payne, before we get to the game itself, there was an article that one of our friends and colleagues put out earlier this week talking about the current state of legalization in this country and maybe the direction that it was headed in. And I took umbrage, not so much with the way that was reported, but some of the overarching concepts that were in there. And I'm not sure if you've had a chance to read it in great detail. It was a little bit cumbersome to try and get through. But you see some of these tech companies saying that they're filing patents to create betting exchanges, that they want to try and get into the markets. Is it just me, or shouldn't these companies have realized that sports betting is taking place everywhere else in the world? And if Microsoft, Google, Bloomberg, etc. thought there was this huge opportunity, they would have already been out there, heavily invested in the European markets, Asia, and some other jurisdictions?
I agree with that. Have not read the article yet. It's bookmarked. It's a long read.
But I think it is long, but I think even if you break it into pieces, for folks that want to know what's going on in the space, you and I take it for granted. We talk to a lot of the decision makers, professional bettors, bookmakers, what have you. So for folks that may be weekend warriors just betting football, I think it's a worthwhile series that ESPN has put together. The second installment, I believe, should be out later today as we record here on Thursday. But it's going to take some time commitment, and there's some concepts in there that are a little bit difficult for novices to wrap their head around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just from the easy perspective, I know how much money this can generate, but I don't feel like it's on the front burner. I think you have to go through the marijuana process first. And yes, it has become legalized in some states. I think you have to get to a point where it's legalized in all states, and then gambling becomes the next topic of choice in terms of generating revenue. I think this is at minimum still 5 years away. I could be wrong, but I'd like to get your take on that. But I think at minimum, you know, we're 5 years away from this.
Well, I think the questions always come up, and I know you and I do a ton of media throughout the course of the week. We're radio hosts. They read these articles and they go, oh, is this a 1 year process? Is it 3 years? I think that's borderline ridiculous from an ambition level to try and be able to put the infrastructure in place, create the logistics. It's not something as simple as just flipping a switch. I know the William Hills of the world, the MGMs, and some of the other sportsbook operators here in the state of Nevada are starting to put themselves in a position where ultimately this does become legal in other states. I'm not going to say that all 50 states will come online at the same time. You know, spots like Utah and Tennessee with more conservative constituencies could take a little bit. But I think there are a lot of things that have to happen. First and foremost, you need the NFL to change its stance. It's got to do a 180-degree turn. You can't have it saying that legalized sports betting will negatively impact the integrity of the game. Because as we know, if the NFL isn't on board with this, Payne, I don't care what other sports are out there, tennis, golf, hockey, baseball, basketball, I don't think you're going to achieve the level of success you're going to look for. So for me, that's going to take some time. And then you look at trying to find the talent. Bookmakers are prevalent throughout Europe and some other markets, but you have to try and bring this talent along. We're critical all the time of what takes place here in the desert because there's not an education process. There's four or five high-profile jobs, and it's a much different market when you're looking at large volume. As you know, professional bettors are going to do everything they can to try and exploit some of the opportunities and be first to market with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. We've talked about the lack of real bookmaking that's taken place in the current market, a lot of air moves, just copying. And from that perspective, I think if you're out in Vegas, and you would know this more than I would, how much money casinos are willing to spend. When you think about the sports book, it's just an added amenity. You could wipe that out, add more penny slots, and it would be more conducive to overall dollars for a casino. So it makes sense. Listen, just bring in a pylon, pay him 50 grand a year to just copy and move numbers. You know, it makes sense from a financial standpoint. But when you talk about broaching things, big business, and it becoming legal throughout, you know, all the states, you're definitely going to have people in place that know what they're doing and pay them a substantial sum. The question here becomes that it would be interesting to see for guys like myself and a lot of the professional bettors, if they're going to gravitate towards the legal markets. Obviously, it's more beneficial when you're factoring in your win percentage if you don't have to account for Uncle Sam. So I still think there's going to be that added benefit of going the illegal route. The thing here, though, is when you potentially go down the path of Google Sportsbook, Facebook Sportsbook, Yahoo Sportsbook, is the volume so huge? Is that number so huge to become completely legal and take the illegal sports books away? Do you start dealing something like -01? Does that become the industry standard? Do you start dealing even or you know, -02 simply because the volume is so huge, you're able to do that?
Well, and one thing, and I do want to say, I know we sounded like we were critical. There are a few, there may be more than that, smart guys out here currently working in the desert, willing to innovate in the space and try and be a little bit creative. But it's an ongoing process. And for what's typically been a conservative market, I do think we've seen changes for the better over the last few years. But having worked for a prominent book, I know what the methodology was and the thought process. You couldn't move lines on the action that you were actually taking at the establishment. You mentioned it being an amenity. It represents such a small portion of GGR. And I think a lot of the times it's a larger play from a public relations standpoint, because you could put penny slots or table games or a variety of other, you know, potential avenues gaming wise and generate more revenue than race and sports. So I think the thought process is changing. It's been gradual, but thankfully we have seen some books go. And one last thing before we actually get to this preview, the Jags Titans, you mentioned lower juice. You mentioned Google Sportsbook, Facebook Sportsbooks, which I think push along the lines and maybe dance around it, the topic of exchanges. And I wonder if you have a larger gambling base, if an exchange can be more successful. Problem being is we've seen in Europe, companies like Betfair have struggled because you only have so many minnows to continue stocking the pond with before the sharks feast, much like we've seen in daily fantasy.
Yeah. Again, you would know more about what goes on at those shops. I know there are some exchanges like that. And again, it takes a huge number of minnows, as you alluded to, for proper numbers to kind of be conducive for sharp guys to enter the market. That potentially could be the case. Again, when you're talking overall volume and the ease of the recreational bettor being able to get money into said sports books, we know that's kind of a battle going on right now. With a lot of the offshore companies, what the United States banking system is allowing to be deposited. So I think ease kind of becomes the benefit to those exchanges. If you can literally, with a flip of a switch, dump a few bucks in there and it just allows the recreational bettor to enter the market, specifically in the NFL, we know they have their say. Then it becomes conducive to maybe pick off some better pricing for sharp bettors. Maybe it gets them in the door, so to speak. And again, if it's better numbers and you're dealing, you know, -101, -102 because of the volume, maybe they become a beneficiary to the legal market and not go illegal.
Yeah, and moving money not only to sports books, but also for the casinos, it becomes an ongoing issue with know your customer rules and regulations. But I don't want to digress too much into that. Just keep in mind for all the folks that have tuned in each and every week throughout the course of the season, you know, with some of these big issues that pertain to all of us that have a passion for sports betting start to present themselves, we'll do our best to offer some perspective and some unbiased commentary to the best of our abilities. Don't want you guys to think that we sit here and it's games first and foremost. That obviously is a big part, but we always keep tabs on what's going on throughout the industry, of course. But when we look at tonight's game, Payne, Jaguars and Titans. Mason mentioned he's seen a little bit of sharp money on Jacksonville, which supports why this number that got to 3.5 flat sits at 3.5 even at BetOnline. Total at 43 has come down a full field goal from where it opened to some shops, even some 46.5. We've talked about Bortles and his lack of pocket presence and awareness. This Jacksonville offense, which was thought by many to be headed on the ascent and a real strength, it's the bottom of the barrel when you talk about efficiency. Defensively, Jacksonville has been better. And then we look at the Tennessee Titans on the other hand. A disappointing performance against the Colts. They've been burning money at the window in their home games. I'm not even sure where we go to try and start handicapping this particular matchup.
We've talked about the, let's just put this nicely, regression of Bortles. He doesn't look comfortable in the pocket. There's really two speeds for him, and it's hot potato. Get the ball out as quickly as possible. Don't let the routes progress, or it's the brain has a fart and I just hold on to it and don't really move and take a sack, or it's just been bad for Bortles. And we were, I feel like, the first to touch on Bortles in the Jaguars. We talked about this nearly 2 months ago and painted the picture of fantasy yards and points, garbage yards and points. And the last 22 games for Jacksonville, they have scored 31% of their points down double digits or more. So when the pressure's off, when the defense goes to this kind of prevent style of defense, allowing you to dink and dunk, that's when Bortles, that's when Jacksonville has had their success in absolute garbage time. I will say this, there are more added elements to handicapping than just numbers. And I can tell you a reason why BetOnline has taken sharp money, why Dave Mason said they've taken sharp money, is because of this added element. The owner for Jacksonville moseyed on down to the locker room this week and wanted to address the team and coaching staff and simply said, why aren't we winning? There's going to be an added onus to win this game tonight for Jacksonville.
Wait a second. There's not an added onus for the Jacksonville Jaguars to try and win games every week. They need Shad Khan to walk down there and pretty much tell them, hey, your jobs are in jeopardy. You guys might actually want to go out there and put together a halfway decent performance.
To put it nicely, he alerted everybody their job is on the line this week.
Well, it's about time because they've clearly played with a country club mentality for a number of their games. I mean, we talked about it last week that there was going to be sharp money on Jacksonville against Oakland. I wrote about it briefly in Pros versus Joes, and it clearly looked anything but sharp when Jacksonville headed in the half down 26. You look at Tennessee on the other hand, Payne, and we watch quarterback play. We watch everything that goes on around him. I want to be excited about what Marcus Mariota brings to the table. I want to think he's capable of taking the next step. But I've been anything but impressed with the second-year signal caller, because when they can't get the ground game going, if a team sells out to stop DeMarco Murray, this passing attack has really been null and void, aside from one big performance that Kendall Wright put together against the Cleveland Browns 2 weeks ago.
When they aren't facing the poor defense of the NFL, the Flying Hawaiian has been quite grounded. He is regressed some, not taken those needed steps. I will say this, Mike Mularkey's offense when it comes to the passing game isn't overly sophisticated. Now you would think ground and pound with that added element takes pressure off the passing game and allows him to pass from comfortable situations, comfortable down in distances. It's just not working for Marcus Mariota right now. I don't understand. They're not going to the tight end position enough. They really need to get Delanie Walker acclimated more into this passing attack. It's where Mariota feels comfortable over the middle. We saw his struggles at Oregon, his senior season when the field shrunk and he wasn't overly accurate and didn't have great arm strength. He was only completing about 40% of his passes at college. It's just not going to translate well to the NFL game when spaces are extremely limited. Guys can cover ground. It's just not a good offense. To Mike Mularkey's credit, he's not a great coach, but he's at least going down with the ship and what he believes in. And the ground game has been an added bonus. It's really helped Dick LeBeau's defense. And that's the concern here when I think about backing Jacksonville is Dick LeBeau's defense has really stymied much smarter, much better quarterbacks than Blake Bortles.
So we've kind of talked about the side. We know that there's sharp money going for some of the more respected bettors and why the number has moved 3.5 flat, probably trending towards 3. Can we make a case on this particular total? You've lost a little bit of value from the full game for sure, down a full field goal, but still some 21.5s out there. And you know, hey, our listeners do as well. We're not forcing plays. Just wanted to kind of walk through the thought process and see if we thought there might be a potential angle there.
Yeah, I have not bet a single thing on this game. And as you mentioned, and we've talked about all these key numbers and totals, open as high as 46.5. You're losing a ton of value going through the largest key number in totals right now, which is 44. You've touched 43 in a lot of places. So I can't go full game under. First half, if you were to play an under, it has to be first half or nothing. I haven't got to that point yet. Nothing for me on this game. So for me, I'm on the sidelines right now. Going to be doing a lot of work over the next few hours. If something changes, you know, I'll probably, we can alert them on our Twitter feed at BetTheBoardPod. But for me right now, as we talk about this, nothing.
Well, that makes two of us, and I know we covered a lot of the marquee games on Sunday in greater detail. I wasn't sure if there was a game or two that really caught your eye for listeners.
I think the Saints. We talked about it on Monday. Hopefully a couple guys grabbed that three that was still available. There are some cheap options to buy out of three currently. There are some threes out there right now that you can get minus 15, minus 20. I still think the Saints present great value this week. I really do, with all the elements that we've talked about, with the potential of Seattle's defense just being worn down. 47 minutes on the field, potentially not a game that they're overly focused on when you had the big division rival last week, then two primetime games in the weeks moving forward. And this Seattle team just really struggling. Offensively, not a lot of great things there. They're not able to run the ball. Russell Wilson, again, injured, hasn't practiced this week. So the added injury to the ankle and the knee, now the throwing side of the pec. So I think you know the Saints are probably a game that's worth investing in, one that I've actually bet at this point. So it'll be interesting to see. The other one, obviously, Oakland, Tampa Bay. There's going to be sharp money on Tampa Bay, clearly already been some sharp money. That will be your classic Joes versus Pros this week that I know you'll probably touch on Instagram. The one factor that hasn't had me invest in the Tampa Bay side yet is, although they're the home team, they're the team that's had to travel. So they played in San Francisco last week. We'll have to travel back home. Oakland stayed on the East Coast. They were in Jacksonville. Partied with that win. Some nightclub spots.
Yeah, there may or may not have been an adult establishment in the future for the Oakland Raiders when they got to Tampa.
They bounced around. It was the from strip club celebrating that Jacksonville Jaguars win for the Raiders this week. So something you're going to want to factor in. And again, still being outgained. Still a lot of public perception that's carried over from the offseason because of their 5-2 record. But this is a team that is being outgained still by 0.8 yards per play. Oakland's just not a very good football team. Couldn't really pull away last week despite getting that huge momentum play before the half with the muffed punt that went for a touchdown. Just kind of the ball is bouncing their way, and that was further depicted, you know, up 10. Potential for Jacksonville to create some noise there on a back door, but a bobbled punt somehow turns into a 24-yard pickup on 4th and 24. So the ball's really bouncing Oakland's way. Maybe that subsides a little bit. Tampa Bay has now lucked into a ground game. Charles Sims gets injured, and finally they went to their best runner between the tackles with Doug Martin out and Jacquizz Rodgers. So that's been a benefit there as well. I would expect some sharp money on Tampa. Have not bet it myself. But if you're in your, pick 'em pools, I think this is a great game to look at Tampa Bay because the rest of your pool is going to be in Oakland. So chance to really gain some ground there.
Nothing says you've arrived as an NFL franchise like going on the road, beating the Jacksonville Jaguars and spending a week to try and celebrate it. As Payne mentioned, a cheap buy out there on the Saints, probably the best single angle that we can find here for Bet the Board in terms of being worth an investment. Fortunately for you, their cheap buys are good. You never have to worry about cheap information on this podcast. And you can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow Dave Mason there as well at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow me at Todd Furman, and of course the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Another week in the books, hopefully another winner a few short hours away for us. So I want to wish everybody best of luck when they go to the window this weekend for NFL Week 8. And more importantly, we'll be back to tell you what we saw through a busy schedule and get you geared up for the Clash of the Titans Monday between the Minnesota Vikings and the Chicago Bears.